Eagle Neighborhood Project.
We'll do that at the regular meeting. This is a work session. Okay, so what we're doing today is basically Brad and Brandon are going to come up. They've been working for a few months on kind of our sewer system and improvements and what we need to do, and particularly looking into the course of Cahill expansion. And they are ready to give a preliminary, I guess called preliminary kind of report and update, and I don't know what all they've got up their sleeve. They have till about 4:15, so as you're watching your clock, make sure we allow to get the questions in. And it's a work session, so I think it's one of those you need to ask questions if you don't understand something. And Patrick? Do you have the right to let the other people introduce themselves? So we
sure,
everyone
please.
Else is here.
I'm Jose with Yukon Engineering. I'm working on a few projects for you guys. Just intending to see what kind of things you guys are doing with that neighborhood.
All right. And say your name again, please.
Jose Manolis.
Thank you. And of course, we know Peter. But say it anyway, Peter.
Peter Russell, Deschutes County Planning. We're processing a Goal 11 exception to sewers.
You can't see from that angle. Peter, you can come over here.
Oh,
I'll take up all the good seats.
Tim, I'm here. Yeah, no, one of the county, I had told Tom them if they want to send someone from the county down because of this kind of, they are working on the Goal 11 and this whole sewer water, and who knows, we looked at a little area. Sit right here.
You're not going to get out of it.
What are these wires?
So, thanks to you two. Go ahead. It's your hour.
Well, thank you. I'll do a real brief introduction, and then Brandon's going to talk about the bulk of your system and some ideas, and then I'll come back and close with financial analysis and funding opportunities for the city. And I would like to just quickly say that what we're talking about is both the water and sewer for the whole town and Cahill, so that we're doing water and sewer study updates to look at how to integrate Cahill in your system, but also the whole town, so you look at the big picture, because it's quite a significant impact, so it's best to look at the entire city and go through that. So we're going to talk about both water and sewer and Cahill, and there's a lot of information in here. Hopefully we can cover, we can easily cover it within the time we have, but you know, if you have a lot of questions, they might be answered as we go, so feel free to ask them as we go, but we'll probably get it because it's pretty detailed information. So with that said, Brandon, just jump right into it, and we've got a PowerPoint and some figures, and while he starts talking and going through it, I'll be passing stuff out to you. So.
I'm going to take a second here and let the record reflect that Councilor Greg Jones has joined the meeting. Thank you. Go ahead.
Great. Good to see you.
Thanks, Brad. Like you mentioned, we're going to go over a little bit of an overview of what we've been doing so far for your water, wastewater updates. And he's handing out some slides here that I've got up on the board. And we'll go through them, but I want to get these together so you guys can jot down notes and have things later. Some of those are going to be tough to see. If you can't see them here on the board, we'll have some figures. And if that doesn't work, let me know. We can get the PowerPoint to you or anything else. So let's start. Let's get right into it here. So the purpose of what we're doing here today and what these studies are, as you can see here, you've got the city of LaPine. So you guys are pretty familiar with this. We're down here, this is kind of LaPine proper. This is what has been called the Newberry neighborhood. The crux of these studies is this Cahill area and what we're calling the West Cahill area. West Cahill area, down here west of the Cahill subdivision. So we've kind of dubbed that West Cahill for the purpose of this study. Glenwood Acres, that area down there is included in that. So what we're looking at is your existing system, and if you were to bring Cahill and West Cahill on your existing system, what are those impacts? Can your existing system take that? If not, what improvements do you need to make, and what are the associated costs with those? As you can see, the city limits come and include Cahill and West Cahill, but they're not on your water system or your wastewater system. So they're inside the city limits, just not connected to your system. Like I mentioned, We're going to determine the impacts to both the water and wastewater to bring those on. And then this is a 20-year planning document. So what we did was we took the current population, added the estimated population of Cable and West Cable, and then we assumed a 2.2% growth of Lapine for 20 years. And that 2.2%, we didn't just make that up. The county has a comprehensive plan that was done that projected the growth of Lapine 2.2%. So that's where we got that. And what we do with those is we look and determine any deficiencies or if there's any necessary improvements in both the water and wastewater to see if there's things you need to do to be able to serve both Cable and West Cable in your existing system. And then we're going to provide preliminary cost estimates for those proposed improvements. And again, like Brad mentioned, if there's any questions or anything, feel free to pipe up anytime. So this is kind of a graphic that shows, like I mentioned, the estimated population of Lapine from the Portland State is 1670. I think that came from the 2014, the last certified estimate. So this is your current population that's on your system, on your water and wastewater system. And this is the population of town. So what's going to happen essentially is if you bring Cagle and West Cagle in, it's obviously not going to happen overnight. You got to build a project. But essentially you're going to tack on 680 users, almost 70% addition to your existing system, just like that. So you got to make sure that your water system can handle that, that you have enough capacity for it, and that your wastewater system can also take that. And then again, like I mentioned, here's the 2.2% growth going on in the 20 years. So your existing water system, what we're going to look at is your supply, your wells, what you have for your supply, your storage, the amount of storage that you have, make sure that it's sufficient for future growth, and then your distribution.
Hey, Brandon, if I could...
Yeah,
that's something real quick. Not to be an alarmist or anything, but just realize how big Cagle is. Relative, and you know that, obviously, you all live here, but that's almost 70% size and area of what you have now, so...
And
it's significant.
It is, Brad, and it's one of the discussions that I always have, and we met with the DEQ, and I think it's DEQ and them would say, you know, it's like an annexation, or it's adding, and I always remind them, this is, if you added a little area, the rest of the city could burden part of the cost. What I've tried to explain to them, this is so huge.
Yes.
This is almost adding another city to you, and you cannot expect those already on the system to pay for it. You can't hide that in everyone else's, which you could if it was 20 houses.
Right.
But you can't do it. It's too big of an increase. And they got to understand that. This is not just a bend adding 200 customers.
Right.
It's a city with a few hundred customers adding a few hundred more.
Right. And that was my point exactly. So you're already on it.
It's
a significant point going from here on out.
And I can't burden, the city can't burden the debt that comes if there's a ton of capital that isn't already thought out because,
Right. Yep. Exactly. Well, thank you. What Rick said. That was my point.
So, to look at your supply here, we've got two wells, well 1A and 2B. Approximately, each one does about 600 gallons a minute. So, your total supply capacity currently is about 1,200 gallons per minute to serve town. Both of these wells are located out near the 1.2 million gallon reservoir out on Finley Butte Road, the big tall reservoir out there. Your storage, like I mentioned, you have the 1.2 million gallon reservoir out on Finley Butte Road. You've also got a 250,000 gallon reservoir at the Public Works Building. Now for the purpose of this study, and we'll get into this here in a little bit, but this 250,000 gallon reservoir we didn't consider as usable storage. I believe it's currently offline. It's gone. The bolt steel tanks sometimes have trouble leaking. It sounds like it's leaked in the past, so it's not currently used. So we didn't include it in the study for usable storage. So the handout that Brad just passed out is some GIS mapping that we've done for you guys in the past. And what it shows is your entire distribution system. So by distribution system, you know, you have the big reservoir up on the hill and then all the pipes that go out through town underneath the road serving people through distribution system. And the nice thing that this shows is without having an aerial knowing where things are, your reservoirs are up here, you know, the 1.2 million gallon reservoir. You've got a 16-inch transmission line all the way into town. You can see the Pine proper here. It's got a good grid network, you know, good looping to to serve customers. And then you get out here towards Cagle and West Cagle, and there's nothing to serve those folks. So that's where this study's looking at. Okay, what do we need to do to get water out there? And not only what to get it there, but then if we do get piping and the right equipment out there, is it going to be able to serve the rest of the community the way it has been?
And then one other point to make on this map, just visually, is every drop of water serving town currently comes down one pipeline from one location.
Right.
So while it's a good site, great tank, great wells, good sized pipe, it's your only way to serve town. So
right.
A lot of cities like to have some redundancy in their system. So that's something to keep in mind as we go through this, that it all comes from one place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's two notes on that. Like Brad mentioned, you know, every drop coming through here, and then everything that comes up here, if you eventually have a full build out there and big fire flows, it's all got to come from here, all the way through town, through this distribution system, through one 12-inch pipe right there you can see,
and then
get out there. So, like Brad mentioned, you got a lot of storage, you have really pretty good supply, but as far as distribution, there's some improvements that are going to be made.
What is the pipe next to 97? Is that part of a smaller pipe system, or?
This one here?
Yes.
I think that's a 12-inch line, goes along the highway there, that is part of your distribution system.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you've got actually, it comes to a point where it separates into this two 12s.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah, I think this is a 12, this along the highway is a 12. Scott, correct me if I'm wrong, is that a 10?
Yeah, 12-inch.
12-inch there? Okay.
And along Burgess as well.
Okay. But yeah.
To give you an example, even though it's a 12-inch loop, it's all fed by one 12-inch pipe.
Right, right.
So it really doesn't do much for doubling your capacity unless it's looped in some other thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Any other questions on distribution before we move on? So we've got some design criteria, and this is kind of a nice little chart we put together to kind of walk through the basic components of what you need in your system. When you're looking at supply and storage. So we'll walk through these and make sure we kind of go slow through and make sure you guys see what I'm talking about here. Starting with supply, we've got three columns here. The year 2015, so right now, we've estimated you got about 982 connections that you're serving. So if you take Cagle and West Cagle on, that's going to jump up to 1670, like we talked about. And then with 2.2% growth, you're looking at 2581 in the year 2035. So what we do is we take your average daily flow from your flow records. Scott has flow records, I send them to state. We take those and we come up with this, you know, nearly 275,000 gallons a day for your average day. And then we divide that among all the people in town right now. And you get 280 gallons per capita a day. So on your average day, everybody in town is using 280 gallons. And you project that out into the future, you know, by multiplying the number of people by the number of gallons each person uses. And so that's how we come up with the total daily flow that you're going to have in the future. And then we take that average daily flow per day and divide it by number of hours and number of minutes to get gallons per minute of flow. So what this really does is it just helps us say, okay, here's the flow they're using, this is what supply they're going to need, and this is helps size your supply for wells. The important thing, though, isn't your average day, it's more your peak day, because you need to be able to size your equipment to serve the day that you're using the most water. I mean, your average day, your peak day is going to be a lot more than your average day, and you need to be able to serve that day. So same thing here, take the peak day flow from your flow records, divide it by the number of folks in town, so your gallons per capita a day is about 700, and Brad, you can elaborate on this a little bit, that's probably about mid-range for Central Eastern Oregon metered cities, have a peak of about 700.
Yeah, having done, Anderson Perry's done studies like this for multiple cities, it's great to be able to compare cities, and you're right in the hunt. Your water use is pretty typical of a Central or Eastern Oregon community. So while this is a bunch of numbers, and Brandon was going through this, and it seemed like a whole bunch of numbers, but your water use is good. I mean, it's right in the hunt. Some cities are a little lower on the average, but there's plenty that are higher. So you're not out of whack, which is a real scientific term.
Yeah.
But you're not out of whack for water use at all.
Yeah,
pretty typical.
Yep. So then, looking at the supply flow available, like I mentioned, you've got two wells about 600 gallons a minute. So they don't currently operate, both at the same time, but if you needed to, you could run both wells and have 1,200 gallons per minute available. So this estimated supply flow required is where that comes from. Just to give you an idea here, it takes your peak daily flow and ensures that your wells are only running for about 18 hours a day. So you don't want to run your wells 24 hours a day. You know, it can be tough on stuff. So that's the estimated supply flow that you need to be able to supply town and not overtax your well pumps. Now, when we get to fire demand, is what you need to be able to have is for residential, these are ISO requirements. Residential, they recommend 1,000 gallons a minute. Commercial and public, more like 3,500 gallons a minute. So you want to be able to size your storage and your distribution to be able to provide that to town. And what they recommend is being able to fight a fire for a duration of 2 hours, those flow rates.
It's important that, you know, fire flows do cost money. If you run a water system just to take care of your drinking, and people forget that, and the fire district forgets that, but we are spending, that's what raises costs of water systems, is fire flows.
Yeah. And
people don't think about it.
Yeah, fire demands for a smaller town are always the driver with regard to sizing everything. And they're the biggest costs, like Rick said. You have to get up to a town like LeGrand or Prineville or somebody about 8,000, 9,000, 10,000, and the peak day actually starts exceeding your fire flows. So the design switches over to demands, but for smaller communities, always fire flows. And they are. They're the maximum size pipe, the maximum pump that drives all the storage.
They don't pay for water, do they?
But yeah, no water flows out of them. It's just you're building a system for them.
Yeah, for the, and then the 3,500 gallons a minute that Brandon mentioned, that's what's always recommended at schools and commercial areas, but not everybody can meet that. That's a big right. number. But that's what's desired. But you certainly want to make sure you can meet the residential fire flows and do the best you can on the others.
Yeah. Okay, so moving through kind of towards the bottom of that sheet there, we have storage. So there's four types of storage that we're going to look at. You've got equalization storage. So your wells are pumping a certain amount of water into your reservoir, and then your citizens and the users are pulling water out of that reservoir. If you're pulling water out faster than you're putting it in, you can imagine there's a certain amount of that tank that you're going to use. So that's your equalization storage. You need to have that available. Operating storage, the wells typically run on a level in the reservoir, so if it's at a certain level, they're off, and then once it gets to another level, they'll turn on. So there's that band storage that you should have in there. Obviously, fire reserve, that's typically to keep that in case of a fire, and that's usually rated about 3,500 gallons a minute. And then you have emergency reserve, and that's usually about a day. You know, some folks decide to store 2 days of emergency reserve to where if you weren't able to produce water out of your wells, you can still serve town for a day or two. So when you make those calculations between what your wells can produce now and what operating storage is in your current reservoir, fire reserve, and emergency reserve, the total recommended storage right now is about 765,000 gallons, so you're good. Year 2015 with Cagle and West Cagle, your recommended storage is a little over a million. So, you know, as far as just looking at numbers and being able to provide water to town, yeah, you can serve it, but like Brad alluded to earlier, everything's got to come through single set of wells, one reservoir, one transmission line to the town. So as far as being able to serve town, you're okay to add Cagle, but as far as the redundancy, the way that the town lies, being able to hydraulically serve the town the best, most efficiently, there's some improvements that we're going to recommend for that. And then at 2.2% growth over 20 years, your recommended storage is closer to 1.5 million. So at that point, between now and the 20-year planning period, you want to consider building additional storage. Any questions on that? Like Brad said, I know it's a bunch of numbers. And yes, Stu.
You have your reserve that you should be able to supply the town in case something happens to your flow.
Right.
And you have one 12-inch line that supplies that reserve, right?
It's a 16-inch line from the tank to town.
Okay, 16-inch. And will that work for 2 days or 3 days, replenishing that?
Yeah, there's only 1 day in there. Okay. You always have, And some cities will do two or three, but when you start adding up the numbers, it becomes a really big tank. And so you hope you can get your well pump fixed or something fixed in a day.
Yeah.
Rarely is something happening you can't fix in a day. But
so that emergency storage is for?
One day.
The one day, day for the emergency that your wells aren't producing, if they're contaminated right. or they're broke down. So the reservoir would still be there, and the pipeline in town would still be there, so you could serve that. But like you're talking, an emergency if your transmission line got dipped into and broke, you're then done. You're in a world of hurt.
Yeah.
Because then you have nothing.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about that a little later about how to address that.
Right. Any other questions on design criteria before we move on?
It's interesting numbers.
One thing.
Yes,
go. When you referenced our well being able to pump 1,200 gallons a minute, but actually our water rate is for 1,000 gallons a minute.
So right.
Somewhere we need to figure water rates into.
And that's a whole other animal in itself.
Maybe we're not there today, but yeah. When we start talking max out numbers, if we have a limit on our max out.
Yep.
Right.
Yep. Especially once you start talking 20 years, peak instantaneous flow, that's definitely something cities are going to look into.
We have a water right that we just that we will be able to access eventually.
Right.
And so we have to mitigate, and we've got to buy some credits. So we'd be over that number, Scott, because we have about another how many gallons been about in that new water right?
700 about.
Which means we'd have 1,700.
Right.
So at 20 years out, we only needed 1,200. So we're pretty good. It's just knowing that we will have to, over that 20 years, buy up some of that water right. Mitigation.
So Brad's handing out a figure one here. I was going to put it on the slide, but you couldn't really see what was going on by the time you tried to stuff this on PowerPoint. So if you look at figure one here, what we did is, in some past work we've done for you, we modeled your entire town. We put a hydraulic model together for your entire distribution system, your reservoirs, put everything in. And so what this allows us to do is we can place different demands in town and show how that affects your distribution system, your storage, how the water system operates. And these colors kind of show you what flow rate is available. These are fire flow maps, which in your case is really going to drive your design. A lot of towns, for instance, we just did a big water project in Enterprise, and the elevation difference from the lowest part of town to the highest part of town can be hundreds of feet. And so you have a real issue with pressure drop. But your guys' advantage is, you know, you've got a tank, higher elevation, big flat area where town's at. If anything, it's heading downhill the further you get. So that's beneficial for you. What's really going to dictate your design is fire flow. So what this shows is the 2015 peak day demand. So right now, these are the fire flows you have available in town. And you can see that the majority of the town is well over, you know, 1,500, 2,000 gallons a minute. As you move north through the Newberry neighborhood, you're at 1,500, 2,000, and then up past Wickiup Junction, you're between 1,000 and 1,500, which really is pretty good flow rates. I mean, that's for a commercial area and schools, you're going to want more than that, but to fight residential fires, that's pretty good fire flow.
It looks like my house isn't covered.
Uh-oh.
The one little red mark on the...
And keep it, just for a little background on the way this computer program works, it takes each hydrant and tests it individually and then comes up with this map. So it's pretty slick.
That's amazing.
It even takes each node, even where there's not a hydrant.
Yeah.
It'll take hydrants in each node. And, yeah.
And it's testing that fire flow on your highest used summer day also happening in the system. So it really models it in a way that gives you good numbers. But it's important to note too that your system's a little bit lacking on the north end. You can see you're in a commercial area and you have 1,000 gallons a minute up on the north end. That's a little bit low. It's hard to fathom those kind of flow rates, but when fire trucks show up from everywhere, they can easily use a couple thousand gallons a minute. So
then figure two I just handed you is 2015 peak day demand. Fire flows, but then with the Kegel areas added. So if you had distributions out of Kegel and West Kegel and you had demands out there, these are the fire flows you'd be able to provide. And you can see that the entire area again is about 1,059 gallons per minute. It's just kind of extended that. But what you'll notice if you look from figure 1 to 2, the big pink blob in the middle where you're 1,500 to 2,000 gallons a minute. It's pushing that to the south. You can see that the impact of having the demand in Cagle, trying to draw that water from the reservoir all the way through town out Cagle, is minimizing the fire flow further north you get. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then, got figure three here, and what it'll show. This is 2035 peak day demand. In the grand scheme of things, 20 years of growth in the actual usage from your customers isn't a lot. The fire flow really dictates what you're going to be able to provide. So it doesn't add a lot because the fire flows are so large. But you can see that there's a couple areas up in Cable and West Cable that have little blue spots. Those are on dead end lines, and you can tell that your fire flow capability is going to drop just because it's not well looped. So if you have water looping, that really helps your fire flow capabilities. But then again, same story. If you look at 1, 2, 3, you can see that pink blob is continually getting pushed south. So you're consistently trying to push more water to the north through just one 12-inch line, and that makes it difficult to provide fire flows out there. I think that's good. So that's a lot of information and a lot of bright colors, but the moral of the story is that you've got decent fire flow out there. Brad mentioned you're kind of right on the ragged edge of what you need to have. And there's some improvements that you can make that'll really help your fire flow. Are there any questions about any of those features? Or?
I think it's a pretty good bait system, really.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if you actually think about it.
Pretty good water, Rick. I'm sorry.
Pretty good system. I mean, you've got enough. The storage tank, yeah, we want one somewhere else, but at least, I mean, to think about it, you almost have enough for 20-year growth.
Yeah.
That's pretty darn good.
Yeah, and the way to look at it positively in working with a lot of cities, there's plenty of cities that are struggling to get 500 gallons a minute in some places around. You know, they'll have undersized pipes. You know, and you're looking at, you got your growth, still have 1,000 gallons a minute for a lot of it. While it might not be adequate for some of the commercial areas, a lot of towns struggle to get their commercial area fire flows up. Mm-hmm.
And just, I think it's important to note, just because you don't have 3,000 gallons a minute doesn't mean you can't build a building.
Yeah.
Because what they do is sprinkling systems, when you sprinkle a building, it lowers the amount of water required because it can put a fire out when it's small. Mm-hmm. Building construction. So there are big, don't sit here and think, well, if we don't have 3,000 gallons, that means that area is off limits other than residential. It just changes how you build a building. It might require they put in sprinkling system and things, which ups their operating costs. And if you're competing with another town that had enough water, you know, it's kind of, our industrial park's pretty good, but
the real crux to this whole thing is your 16-inch line from the tank. I mean, if that had been put in as a 12, it'd have been amazingly less.
Yeah.
So that was wise.
Yeah.
And just in recent fire flow tests that I've done, it matches right on par with it. So, I mean, it's real world and computer models.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there is some
tweaking. Showing that actually.
Yeah, we try to tweak the model to get it right, so that's good to hear.
Yeah. In your system as a whole, like you were saying, Rick, your ISO ratings are tremendous. I mean, for most, you know, small towns in central and eastern Oregon, you guys have got great ISO ratings. So your fire suppression hole is good, you know.
Yeah.
So. Okay, so those are those three figures. Recommended improvements. Talk a little bit about what we have here. Talk about figure six. So what this got developed from is looking at your design criteria. So you start there and say, okay, how's our supply? How's our storage look to serve the community? And then like we just went through those models, you look at the distribution system and say, okay, is everything served adequately? Do we have enough fire flow in all the areas that we need? Obviously the improvements in Cagle and West Cagle are no-brainers. You gotta get water to folks. I mean, that's just getting the pipes in the ground so that they can get water to the area. You'll also notice that down in the south part of town, there's a few new lines that we added that will help looping in that area. Something to keep in mind with this figure right here is this is a 20-year planning period. To bring Cagle and West Cagle on, those are obviously going to need to be done soon. But some of these lines down here, consider it for 20 years. You know, not all these are critical right now. I would say some of the most critical improvements we have on here, like we talked, if you look at your distribution figure, where there was that one 12-inch line that served from Lapine up to the north, we've added another 12-inch connector in there that'll help make another loop. So like you were talking about, Mr. Mayor, the one 12-inch line split into two, you'll have two 12-inch lines to serve that. That makes a big difference in your fire flows. You'd be amazed. And then finally, kind of another improvement we looked at is if you add a reservoir and a new transmission line on the north end of town, that would help with fire flows and helping your hydraulic efficiency of serving your distribution system. So like you looked at your distribution map, everything's got to come from that reservoir through one pipe all the way through town to get to the north. And the way Lapine's set up, is, you know, it's like a dumbbell. It's got an area on each end and not a lot in the middle. So if you serve it from both ends, it really helps hydraulic efficiency.
And this map that you're showing us right here, is you've got this new reservoir out here.
Uh-huh.
I'm assuming you've got a pump too.
Yeah, a well there.
A well, okay. Maybe you said that and I missed it, because otherwise I was wondering how we were getting water to it.
Yeah. Right, you'd want a well and a little pump.
So this is a full, and yeah. I like that, if you think about it, then you're throughout north, you've got it, you're feeding from both directions. If one pipe went down, you can still feed the town for water.
Yeah. Yep.
And what's that little, is that a subdivision that's kind of on the way there?
Yeah.
Newberry Estates.
Yeah, you could potentially hook it up on with that route.
Yeah,
just we didn't
consider.
No.
Just only gets a cold limit exception.
I think Rick, you're hitting you're dead on there, because while the city could probably make it with this growth criteria with what you have, there's some cities will do these types of improvements just to give themselves redundancy and eliminate risk of having all your eggs in one basket for supply and storage and distribution and your transmission.
Well. We were driving around today looking at these on the planner, and I mentioned the fact that it bothered me having the tank and everything clear out there. So there's one line coming in, if that broke, or if the tank, just something happened. Even if we had 1 million gallons in town where you could last a day in town, but this does the same thing by having it out there. So I think it's something that we do need to do. It's not a crisis, but when we build an ad, I think it needs to be
in the plan.
Yeah,
it gives you. It would give you fantastic redundancy in your system, and that one day of emergency, you barely need it. You know, because you got, it's highly unlikely both sides would go at once.
So. Okay, so if we take a look at the figure four that I handed you, this is the 2015 peak day demand fire flow. We've added Cagle and West Cagle. Plus, we've put the new reservoir, well, and pump in the 16-inch transmission line on the north end of town. If you look, almost all of Lapine proper, Newberry neighborhood, and most of Cagle and West Cagle, you can get 3,000 gallons a minute of fire flow. I mean, you can easily double it. Just that's the hydraulic efficiency of being able to feed the town from both ends. So, as the fire chief, I mean, that's a no-brainer. But like you mentioned, it costs a lot. So.
Yeah.
To build your system for that, but that's a good thing to consider. Not only you're helping your hydraulic efficiency, you're helping your system long term to serve the folks out there, and that redundancy like we talked about, you know. So that's kind of what that figure shows.
Yeah, this is really, really flush on fire flows, but it's more for the redundancy of the redundancy of that gives you that extra fire flows.
And well, we own all that land out there now.
Yeah, so.
So, you know, all that land is, so that's our land, someday it'll be something.
Yeah. Oh, and that's a good point. This is just looking at adding Cagle and growth. This type of a setup would go well past 20 years we've assumed.
Oh, yeah.
Big time, yeah.
And that's what this last figure shows. This is the 2035 peak day demand. So 20 years of growth, fire flows, with Cagle and West Cagle, and as you can see, don't make much difference at all. You still have 3,500 gallons a minute through the majority of your area. So that would be a very good long-term setup, give you redundancy for the whole system, provide you with fire flows you need all through town, be a good long-term solution. So that is what I have for water. Are there any questions before we move on to your wastewater?
So, are you giving costs today or not?
Yeah.
That comes later.
We saved the best part for last.
Real quick, before we move to wastewater, you're just talking a new reservoir well and transmission line on the north end. Of course, you need the piping to get cable in, no matter what you do. And then a couple of key pipes in town, and that's it. You know, it's not real large. I mean, the price tag can be a little bit large, but it's not like you need a whole bunch of work all over town. It's really pretty small when you think about it.
Does this do something? Wasn't there a loop needed down in the industrial area? Does this have it? Is that shown in here? Remember we talked about? We talked.
I don't know if they included or put that in, but
actually, if you go back to Figure 6, I think Brandon did have it in there.
There it is, little black line.
Yeah, the yellow line.
Yeah, there you are.
And there's a little green one.
Yeah, and there might be one as well that we missed on here. I think Rick or Kenley was saying that. Loop through the industrial park.
It's not there. It goes from that one little H next to the yellow over to Finley Butte.
Yep.
Yeah, we need to get that in there.
There's about two or three pipelines that aren't shown on here that are, they're overall going to help your efficiency and your hydraulic efficiency in your system that we didn't include. This was more of a, we looked at Kegel and added some key ones, but I know that there's a couple that we didn't include that were more future. Yeah, do them in 20 years, but let's focus on these now.
Yeah, I know that the Economic Development Group talked about this at length, so.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Well, we'll get it in there.
We'll add that loop for sure. Yeah. Okay, any other water questions before we move on? Okay.
Save all your little maps. There's a lot of copying in there.
Yeah.
You have to look at them again.
So for wastewater, we'll shift gears here, and for your district system, the things we're going to look at are your collection system, your treatment storage, and your disposal. So your collection is kind of similar to your distribution of water, but just kind of backwards. Instead of going out, it's coming back in. And then you've got treatment and storage lagoons, and you have disposal on a 75-acre hay field, and we'll talk about that. So here's your collection system again, the GIS that we put together for you guys. And you can see the green lines. These are all your collection lines out underneath the streets that wastewater is put into that eventually heads to your wastewater treatment plant. Now some of these are pressured lines. You have lift stations that have to pump up to your wastewater system, treatment plant, and some of them are gravity. But again, this kind of shows the same sort of thing. You know, you can see all the collection lines here in Lapine proper, and you get every cable, and there's nothing to serve these folks.
It's interesting on this map, and I'm behind Brandon here passing this out, that there really isn't any sewer off of 97 to the west. It hasn't expanded as far as the water.
Right.
As you can see there.
Yeah. So as I mentioned, you guys, I think you've got five total, but one's one's kind of a grinder pump down in the ground, so I don't have a pretty picture of it. But you've got these four lift stations. These are all part of your system that wastewater gravity flows to, and then they're pumped from these to your wastewater treatment plant. So this is just part of your operational. Most of these seem to be in good shape. This one here, we're currently wrapping up a design to reconstruct that Wickiup lift station. So I just wanted to show you, just kind of give you a feel for your system. It's part pressure, part gravity. Your treatment and storage. So you've got three treatment lagoons and a storage lagoon. The three treatment lagoons, you've got 4.79 acres, 2.67 acres, two 2.67 acre ponds. And they're all 10.5 feet deep. And then you've got one storage lagoon that's 13.2 acres and it's 12.4 feet deep, which are pretty sizable lagoons. Also, as part of your system, you guys have septic. So not only for your own system, you guys have what they call a septic tank effluent gravity system. So everybody in town's got a septic system, and then the gray water is sent to the treatment plant through the gravity and the pump stations. And then you guys run around and pump the septic tanks and bring the septic to your treatment plant. So where a typical wastewater system sends water and solids and everything all in one fell swoop, you guys are kind of breaking it out. So you've got the groundwater come in and then run around pump the septage and receive it. And this is your septage receiving station. This is one thing I wanted to show a picture of just because this is something we've talked with Scott that we might look at improving. You're permitted for up to 250,000 gallons a month of septage reception. So you not only run around and get your own septage in town, but you're also, people are paying you to dump their septage here as well. And that has a huge implication on your treatment capacity and your ability to treat your wastewater, which we'll get into here in a little bit.
Nice photo, huh?
Yeah.
I cleaned it up the best we could.
Yeah.
Oh, so you did it on the floor.
You already cleaned it up before the photo? Okay.
Oh, that. Oh, I missed the discussion. May that thing is a disaster.
Was this in your job description form? Did they tell you about that? Or does it fine print?
Yeah. I think it's a post-lunch meeting, huh?
So again, this septage receiving station itself could be improved.
This right here is why Scott's worth everything he's paying.
That's right.
No comments?
So for disposal system, this is an aerial of your treatment system here, and these arrows kind of show how things kind of flow through the system. So your lift stations are pumping into this first treatment lagoon. And then from here, it goes in series into this lagoon, continue treatment, and then it's stored here. And then from here, once it's treated, you're irrigating on this 75-acre hay field with a pivot irrigation system. So let's talk wastewater 101, and this is going to be really simplified. These things are really complicated. There's a lot of stuff going on, but for people like me and Brad, we're going to dumb it down as much as we can because we're not wastewater experts. But the key thing here, there's a couple things going on. There's bacteria and there's algae. So there's bugs and plants in your pond. And it's kind of like humans and trees, how they kind of interact. There's dissolved oxygen and there's biochemical oxygen demand. So the bugs in your system are what are eating the poop in the pond, for lack of a better term. Those bugs need oxygen, and they get that from the algae. They get it from the algae, and they also get it from the atmosphere. So just like trees are giving us oxygen, we're giving them carbon dioxide, same sort of cycle. The more bugs, the more poop, the more bugs, the more oxygen. Kind of a way to think about it. You get oxygen, like I mentioned, from the algae, from the atmosphere, and then in your guys' case, this is a basic facultative lagoon, so if you just had a big pond out there and you just put all your wastewater in it, it would treat itself with these bugs naturally. But if you have more wastewater than you can treat naturally, you go to a partially aerated facultative lagoon, which is what you guys have. So if you've got more poop, need more bugs, and need more oxygen, you force air into the water, and that creates more of that dissolved oxygen to feed those bugs so you can treat more wastewater. So that's an extremely simplified version of what's going on in those ponds. But is everybody with me on that?
Good enough.
Makes sense? Yeah. So one issue that we're finding, and let me just say we're partway through our analysis with the wastewater system. We've got some good preliminary findings. We're working with Scott to make sure we get good data. One of the first things we're finding is your blower that's forcing this air into your wastewater system is extremely inefficient. So you can imagine you're blowing all these bubbles into a pond. Some of them are going to just come to the surface and go back up in the air and you didn't get anything out of it. Some of them are going to get taken up by the bug. Some of them get dissolved into the water. So you can pump as much air into the pond as you want, but if it's not efficient, you're not getting that air to the bugs.
Is that the yellow units setting up on top that you're talking about?
This pipe right here, and there's a big stainless steel module under there that's blowing air.
Okay.
These green numbers are mixers.
Okay.
Pushing the water around. So your oxygen transfer efficiency, from the literature we could find, you get about 2%. So for all the air you're pumping in there, you're only getting about 2% of the benefit of it, which is a pretty high power cost to only be getting 2% of what you're putting in. So your typical BOD loadings. BOD is just kind of the measure of how much food your bugs need to eat. Typical wastewater with solids and everything, you're looking at about 220 milligrams per liter of BOD. So your steg water, obviously it's lighter because it doesn't have all the solids in it. So it's just kind of the wastewater, the gray water, if you will. It's only about 136 milligrams per liter, so it's lighter. But then raw septage is approximately 6,500 milligrams per liter. So if you were just taking your own raw septage and putting it in there, it'd probably come out in the wash and be about the same as a typical wastewater system. But when you're taking on everybody else's septage, Brad and I talked at length to try to come up with a good comparison, good analogy for this. So you got hot cocoa, right? If regular wastewater is your regular 2 scoops of hot cocoa, your guys' wastewater is 1 scoop. It's lighter. But then once you've made your own hot cocoa, other people come by and dump 5, 6, 7 scoops of hot cocoa mix in your cup. So it's really strong stuff by the time everybody gets done dumping their hot cocoa in there. That's a lot better than talking about food.
It works. That's good.
Hot cocoa's better than
This is such a fun subject.
Yeah.
Yes.
I love it.
Gotta talk about it.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So when you're talking about BOD loadings in your initial facultative lagoon, you want to shoot for about 50 pounds per acre. So you can imagine if you add a lot of BOD loading to a small pond, it'll eventually go septic. It'll fail. You don't have enough bugs to treat it. It stinks. You get really bad odor. So you want to try to shoot for that criteria. You guys exceed that by quite a bit, but what you can do is you can add aeration. So you put more oxygen in, or you increase the area of your ponds. Those are kind of the options. So I guess some discussion items that we don't need to discuss today, but something that the thing is to keep in mind is that you're receiving this septage. Depending on how much money you're making on that, is really going to drive, it's going to have a large impact on your treatment. So if you're going to continue to receive all this septage and you're going to size your plant, you know, you're probably going to need some improvements. What those improvements are, we're still working on. It could be as simple as updating your aeration system. It might be additional treatment lagoon. It could be a range of things. But that's something that is kind of an overarching higher level decision of, do we continue to do this if it's making us money, or do we save the headache and not do it? Because without receiving that septage, that system is likely fine for what you're serving for town without any improvements.
And maybe even for Kegel without any significant improvements. But
right. Yeah.
What you're saying is if we continue taking in septage like we are, it's not functioning the way it should.
You're right on the ragged edge.
It's keeping up, but it's getting loaded pretty heavy. And I guess to cut straight to the chase on this is, if people are hauling septage from a long ways away, then you're probably not charging enough. Just they're going to find the cheapest place and do it. So either you decide to size the system and charge enough to make it pay and go ahead and take it, or quit taking it because you're not making enough to justify what it's going to drive you to when you add K. That's pretty much it.
Do we have any comparisons about what Ben charges as to what we charge and why we have such a loading of people coming down here to dump?
Well,
looks pretty obvious, but...
Yeah, and it's the reason I'm chuckling is I just did this and then I didn't bring it with me. Did you do that?
I looked, I couldn't find
it. We did this just recently, but I don't have it with me, but I'll get it for you.
Actually, it's in our rate study.
You're cheaper. You have to be cheaper if people are driving all the way to La Pine to do it.
We've talked
about...
We're 4.75 cents a gallon. Yeah. And they're probably 9 or 10.
Yeah, and when I talked to a septic person, and this is a unique thing. One operator in the area, and life is what life is, and life is tough, and some people have been in the business a long time. There is one operator that has a permit, so they can dump on their own property. They don't have to pay that 4.75 cents cost. And their comments are, well, we already are paying about a nickel a gallon more. They're free. We can't compete. So if you raise your price, it makes it hard for us to compete. And as I explained, I get that. It's in my knowledge base. But I said, I also can't keep our system operating at a loss because one person, because of their length in the business, has what they have. You know, that's where the city's role in that.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a dilemma, because he was saying, oh God, don't raise that septage dumping, because then it just makes us not competitive with the competitor. And
But I don't know if that's played into this over the years or.
Well, it has, and there is some political BS that happened before Scott. Maybe that's what the BS stands for.
Very good.
Levine and Ben. And you guys are the ones that have to pay the bills, you know. So, but to me, it's almost not a money thing if taking it is a disruption to our treatment process.
That's right.
I don't care about the money. I care about wastewater treatment.
Yeah. What I think we need to do is price it what it costs. It's a service we're providing, just what they're going through Goal 11. Some of these people out there, you know, it's so cheap doing it how they're doing it out from here to Sun River. They don't realize there is a cost. We don't want the sewer because sewers cost a lot.
Yeah.
Well, it's being subsidized to a degree in a weird sense. If they're coming in here and we're taking all those septic trucks at a loss, the city residents are subsidizing these septic systems 5 miles out of town. And they need to know what it truly does cost. So if it costs them $50 a pump to pump every 5 years, it's small compared to what we're talking about. We're raising people's sewer bills $5 and $10 a month. So
yeah, and it really comes significant if you have to expand your system because of it.
Well, I just had a septic tank pumped. It's still $50.
No, I said raise it. If it had to go up that.
Oh, I see.
In other words, if they bring in, it's how big is a 3,000?
1,000 gallons.
1,000 gallons, if you raise it another penny. What's that? $10?
Bucks.
Huh?
Did I do that right?
$10.
$10.
$10.
That's not a lot.
So instead of $350, it's $360. That isn't going to put anyone out of business or.
What is our cost? We're charging 49 cents?
Yeah,
what's our cost to actually do it?
We don't know that yet. That's what we're just saying.
Because it should be at least that. Nothing lower than that.
So if we have to improve that machine, you saw that it's icky, and we need to go and spend a couple hundred thousand on that to make that, but it's a fake number. I don't know. It could be $1 million, it could be $50. But to fix that and to do these things, Madras takes it in for the rural area. I mean, it's kind of the city, you almost have to do it in the area you're in. But you got to charge it to pay for, and they have that system, that roller that you saw there and all that. They calculate out how many gallons are coming in there, and you so the city resident doesn't subsidize it. That's what we probably are going to need to do, is figure out what it's going to cost to make it right.
Yeah.
And we just did this for Primeville. That's why I'm sorry I didn't bring it, but we can put it into the study because they were looking at the same thing.
And that machine, I got one quoted. For Scott's sake, about 150 grand gets you the key lock or the card lock. Truck can just come up, punch his number in, dump and leave.
Yes.
And it automatically does.
That's it.
Deals with
it.
Yeah. So that's a minor cost.
Sure.
If you're taking 250,000 gallons a month and all of a sudden you need a new treatment again, now you're talking dollars.
Yeah. We're taking in our budget this last year was like 67.
100 from septage?
Yeah.
100,000.
100,000? So we're taking in a good amount of money.
So $100,000 would pay for a loan for a $3 million improvement. But is that something the city wants to do, or you just say, well, we're limit what we take and do nothing?
Right.
You know what I mean? That's kind of the big battle.
And in our case, we do use ourselves.
Right.
Because we in our system.
One for us too.
Right.
Yeah.
So you need the 150 probably, but you can make some managerial decisions
that's
where
correct.
You don't need the treatment, the additional treatment. So that's kind of a big picture sort of thing. So with that, I'll let Bradley take over and do the fun stuff. I gave you the good news.
Mm-hmm.
Now Brad's turn.
Which one's the that's go? And
that's go. The green's the pointer.
Okay, great. Yeah, there's only about 5 more slides, but this is where we get into the financial analysis and cost estimates. And we need to caveat this that these cost estimates are very preliminary. I mean, we've looked at some numbers, but they're close. But they could go up and down based on what the city ultimately ends up doing.
Brad, question.
Yeah.
Please. At what point will we see, like, we don't see any potential piping here for sewer for cable and that, or is that on a different picture?
Yeah.
So what we're going to need to do out there is, like, Glenwood Acres are kind of down a hole, so we're going to need a pump station. We've kind of preliminarily set a couple, but we're not entirely sure where we're going to need to pump yet, what's going to be able to gravity feed, what we're going to be able to serve where. So we're still working on that. That's part of that analysis we haven't got to yet.
But you have a good point that this figure here that showed where all the water pipes would go,
right.
I mean, the sewer pipes are pretty much going to go where the water pipes are.
And you'll just have a couple of stations in there.
And keep in mind, too, that back when this is the WikiUp design draft to give you see today, this was done to handle all this easily. So when you fix this for your current needs, it's also set up, in case you do this, to very easily handle all that pumping.
So we start pumping to that.
Yeah.
And then it'll come into our plant.
Yep. So I'll run through this quick and then get into the estimated costs and some grant opportunities. But before we go through this, you're going to see some big numbers for all these improvements, but you're also in a fantastic funding situation. And I'll explain that, so it's not scary. You currently have 721 connections, and then you're going to add quite a few when you add cable and west cable. I mean, the difference here is 100 and what is it?
275.
275, that's a lot. Yeah, so you're going to add 275 connections. And then if you bill it out at just your current base rate, it's almost another $100,000 a year in revenue. So as soon as you bring Kegel on at your existing rate, that's how much revenue you'd get. And so you can see that, yes, it's a burden to get them on, but it's also going to be a financial, you get more money. Now this affordability criteria, can you pass that out?
Yeah.
This affordability criteria table.
Is this sewer or water?
That's one, I think. Yeah.
Sewer or water.
Yeah. So that'll actually happen twice.
What? Water?
Yeah.
Well.
Roughly. But that was the analysis here is on water, but you're right, that would happen twice.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Yeah. Just to know if there's a difference.
What Brandon's passing out is the financing table from the Infrastructure Finance Authority. They're the funding agency that's the state of Oregon that handles almost all of the funding programs. Not the federal government, the USDA, but this is the state. And if you go to the highlighted line, this is kind of hard to see, but I highlighted the pine, so here's the data for you. Go all the way over to the second column from the right, and you'll see $28.89, and that's right up here in this. This affordability criteria is the formula that the IFA uses to determine the threshold level that your costs need to get to before they'll consider you for grants. And they do it in water based on 7,500 gallons a month. So look where you're at for 7,500 gallons a month for residents for water. Look where you need to be to qualify for grants. So that's fantastic. You already qualify for a lot of grants. Does that make sense?
Yep.
So you're there. Now for sewer, it's based on a residential connection, an EDU, equivalent dwelling unit. And what is your sewer rate?
Just went up.
Just changed.
It'll
be
based on where usage. So, but the base rate is 1903 for a 5/8 meter.
Yeah. So you're not quite.
July 1, we just changed.
Yeah. Okay.
But there's also that flow charge on there.
Right.
That was put it up.
It'll be over.
Most over that.
Yeah. Threshold. So you're over that sewer too. So
if I did it like I do for water.
Yeah. So you're in a fantastic situation for being grant eligible because you have to get there. And where this matters, let me give you a quick. So City of Weston. They were at $10. Lowest water rate I've seen ever. $10. And so when they are faced with improvements, they'd have to raise it to 25 or 30 just to get to grant eligibility. But you're already there. Does that make sense? And on top of that, you go to the next slide. Here's some grant eligibilities. And one of the biggest ones is on back of this table. If you look all the way to the right hand side, you're highlighted green, and it says 82.74%. That's your low to moderate income percentage, which is very high. This is figured on a 5-year running average, and that makes you eligible for block grants. Now, a block grant is a big deal. You can get up to $3 million to do a project per system, meaning $3 million for water, $3 million for wastewater. Are there funding people in the room? Okay. I was going to say, correct me if I mess this up. We do this quite a bit, but these are always changing, but this is the general story. This is a federal HUD program, but it's administered by the state. The IFA also does the Water Wastewater Fund. They have, because of your income relative to the states, you qualify for a max grant from that, which is $750,000. But this program requires you to get an equal or greater loan to qualify for that grant. So you have to match on that one. This one you don't, if you're above the criteria. Safe Drinking Water, it's a loan fund that pays for water projects. They have a principal forgiveness where they can provide, it's principal forgiveness at the end of the loan, but essentially grant. Clean Water Revolving Loan Fund is a DEQ program for wastewater projects that'll do the same thing. USDA Rural Development, I think some of your past projects were done with USDA, used to be Farm Home. That's the federal government. They get about $14 to $18 million a year in the state, and they'll sometimes get for up to $1 million in grants, but there's usually a loan associated with that too. So while we're showing you a bunch of grant programs, and we've done several projects where some have been mixed and matched, you know, you'll get these three or some of these others, they'll come and play together. You may not be able to get all the grants because they may not stack them all up, but you could potentially get $3 to $5 million per utility in grant funds. So you're in a great situation depending on how this all stacks up. And I think the important thing to say here is that DEQ is really encouraging the city to add CAGO for various reasons. Well, then I would encourage us collectively to help encourage them to help encourage these funding agencies to do that. You know, because like Rick was saying, it's hard for the city to pull CAGO in and have all the existing users pay for it. That's not really fair. But, okay, so there's your grant potential. Let's talk about costs. And see that number? That's huge. But if you add CAGO and West CAGO for just water, it's about $4.5 million. Now keep in mind, and correct me if I mess this up, that's just the piping and everything needed to get water out there, and it's as the service lines, full-blown meters to the, you know, because you can't forget anything. You don't want to do a project and then all of a sudden forget your meters or something. That's everything. All that is the piping through CAGO, the fire hydrants, the valves, the service lines, meters, the whole nine yards, and you've got everybody hooked up. The other recommended improvements is the transmission line to the east, tank, and well out there. 3 million. So, wastewater. We've ran the numbers on getting all the piping to get CAGO into the system. And we put two lift stations in our preliminary cost estimate because it's really hard, it's pretty flat. But you're looking at $3.5 million. And then this range is for the other recommended improvements for your wastewater system, for the whole system. The reason we have, and we're not narrowed down on this yet, this depends on, as Brandon indicated, a lot of analysis with checking our numbers to make sure we're good on the data with Scott. And obviously, if you quit taking septage, then you're going to be on that end. If you keep taking septage, you'll be over here on this end. So some of these decisions will need to be made. So we got this range. I think you're going to need at least an $8 million bottom part to bring CAGO in. And that'll climb. You could potentially be clear up to this range if you were on the far end of everything. Now, this looks daunting, but it's actually possible based on our analysis. But you're going to be in this range. And this is where a philosophical discussion starts. Is some cities will think, you know, well, why? Let's just do the bare minimum. But the risk of that is you're at an opportunity where you're shopping for grants and you're doing a project. So sometimes going for the whole enchilada with the funding agencies is better because you can actually get a better deal than being down here. You might be able to do this whole range for the same rate impact, depending on the packages they give you. So what I recommend to a lot of cities, go ahead and go for everything you need because you can always step back. You know, you go after them and then they can't give you the best package. Okay, well then we step back. But if you go in on the bottom end, it's very difficult with funding agencies to say, oh, hey, we need another million. Well, why didn't you ask for that in the first place? So it's usually wiser to go for it if you want to do it. So we got two funding scenarios in here. You know, if you had the $14 million, let's say it's worst case, and I'm trying to get this verified, but I know you can get $3 million for utility. What I was trying to get them to tell us today is if you can do the project all at once, because there would be some wisdom in not doing the water and then later the wastewater. Do it all at once.
Oh, you're tying up a road once.
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense. Not.
But sometimes with block grant, they won't let you have two open in the same pace. But just I was trying to get that verified, but I don't have the answer yet. If you're able to get block grant for $6 million, and then you couple that with the water, wastewater loan and grant, and then some of these other combinations, you can see that you're going to be, and this close enough to the same number, you've got half of it as grants. And so if you had this much of a loan, we've run the math, and it's really only a $2 to $4 increase after you add Cagle, and then everybody else would go up a couple bucks. And this whole thing can be done. Now, you might say we just raise rates, why would we want to do this? Maybe what you've just done already covers this. You know, if you've done it and you're making excess money, you might already be there. But you can see from the analysis, you know, you're not that's amazing.
That's not that big a number.
That's not that big of a number. Yeah. And by the time you did all the math and all the analysis, you might not have to raise it. Because you're already above the affordability criteria, you've already met the requirements. You might already have taken care of this in your own actions. And so I was amazed, because when Brad and I were adding up the numbers, like, oh my goodness, you know, $14 million. But then when you start looking at the funding, it's really feasible. And keep in mind that it just blew me away that the numbers were that big, but you've had some past studies done and their numbers were, you know, similar. You're adding in almost your half or three quarters plus of your town by adding cable, so that's a significant increase. That's why these numbers are big. Another scenario, let's say some of these programs didn't play. And another scenario let's say you're on the bottom end and you only got one block grant and you could go to USDA and, that should be a one. Sorry about that. But if you had a grant of one and a loan of four for five and add that three and get to eight, you could do this without even raising rates, the 2 to 4, because your cable addition would almost cover that loan. Right there. So running the math, you can see that the cable revenue is a big deal.
Yeah.
So I think the crux of that, before we move on, that it's a big price tag, but you're in a fantastic position for grants. And if the council chooses through this process to pursue all this, I'd highly recommend you go for all of it, because you can always back off. And that way the funding agencies can try to work up a package for you.
When will you have the rest of the stuff, the mayor asked some good questions there, when will you guys kind of have this wrapped up for you? Some of the things you're still looking at, is this a month out?
That is the next slide, Rick. We can speed this up because we think we have a good handle on it, but that's what we wanted to talk about here just to wrap this up. We could easily probably make this by, you know, mid to late August or early September. Come down here with this whole thing polished off, because these are they're preliminary.
Well, you have to be done though. This was a grant that needed to be done in,
was it December?
October?
Was it October?
Yeah.
Okay, well then.
This was funded by the state, so.
Yeah.
We better go back and look at your grant documents on that.
So we'll check. We're actually, this was
easy. It'd be maybe the end of October, first November, but I don't think it's going to get you out to December.
Yeah, and that's just a month.
Yeah.
It's always take a long time to review. We can do this quicker, but we could easily get this done to where we were down here for the second work session a lot sooner than that, and then polish off the study and maybe back these up a month. But the point is we feel good about the water. We're already there. It's the sewer we're just a little nervous about. We want to make sure with Scott on some data. And then come down here for another work session if that's what you think was best for the council. I mean, that's why it's up here to ask you. But it'd be nice to come down, and our next presentation could be a little bit more compressed because you've already seen it all, have the data numbers really dialed in. And then the draft study would go out. And with the draft study, you start pursuing funding. You know, you don't have to wait till it's final. And the reason this is important is the block grant is your key grant source. They go quarterly in the year, A lot of times by the fourth quarter, their money's gone. So it'd be wise, if there's extra, if there's still money, to go in this fourth quarter for now. But ideally, we would go in the first quarter of 16. So we'd have this wrapped up and go have a one-stop meeting for October, November. They invite you to apply, get that thing in the first quarter, because everybody out there is wanting to block grant and get your stuff in the first quarter. If they're accepting them, every now and then the federal government doesn't get their act together and they don't know what they have and it'll go to second quarter. But the sooner you get in, the sooner you're ahead of everybody else.
Are we talking about the first quarter of this or 16?
16 for going after that funding.
A couple things. What I'd like to do is, this October or something, finish this up, have a presentation to the council, and probably advertise it a little bit, so that people can come in and listen and comment. What I like is a decision on from them based on that information. It's the we've been kind of called these jump off points. It was to go ahead and do the study. Yes, the next one would be we now know the costs and some of the parameters to try to get grants. So I'd like them then to authorize to move forward to the next step, which would be hunt grants and loans. Yeah. And then that'll take months. Could take us 6 or 8 months to get all of that. Then you'll have all the info about a year from now, 8, 9 months from now, whatever. And you'll know then, okay, this is based on an amount of grants, this is what we think it's going to cost everybody. Then you make that jump off point.
Right.
And then we move forward to construction documents and ultimate bidding. Now that's being simple how it works, but basically this time next year you'd be deciding to move forward.
Yeah, if you got the block grant app in the first quarter, they take them all at the end of March. It takes them 2 months to process and tell you what you have. Now you're at the end of May. Then there's paperwork. So you're in June of 16 when you know you got money.
And I've been talking to the state, talked to him on the phone the other day. These people in Salem know, and Ken, you're in a committee with Annette Leva. The Regional Solutions is going to be here in September. And again, I always try to keep everyone focused. We like to talk about 40 things. And then when you get into this, we got to narrow our topics down, and why there's a lot of things we like, you have to kind of, and I've been, when I asked Annette what with the state of Oregon as a group and their kind of one-stop discussions, it's sewer and water funding for this project. And because they bring all these people in here, DEQ and everyone, and we have to stay focused. If, in fact, the South County nitrate issue and pollution issues are this important to the state of Oregon, as they have said they is and are, then you need to come forward, because this will take several hundred users off of the system out here and get them on wells and get the nitrates and their septic systems out. So, put your money up
and
prioritize it. But we got to prioritize it, and then we'll need the county to help prioritize it, as partners with us, because it's been a kind of a rope around them for a long time. So. I think that's kind of the strategy.
Yeah, you might get a better deal than we've preliminary talked about.
Well,
and you can see it's possible to get this done with very little to no rate increase.
We have reserves. They'll see.
Oh yeah, they always end up seeing it. Any questions,
council? Any questions?
Do we want to set when we're come back for the...
Well, I think we need to know when that grant needs to be done, but I would say September's fine.
Okay, we can make it by the end of August.
No, September's fine.
Okay.
Just your wrap-up may need to be in October.
Okay. Brandon's writing things, so I'll commit to anything.
Yeah. And that's when we would hold our meeting to decide to move forward, something like that.
Well, thank you for your time, and we're going to hang out for the rest of the stuff, if that's all right.
Yeah. Okay.
Anything further? Hearing none, motion adjourned.
But so we're recess, adjourned. Actually. We're just,
recess?
Yeah, we're taking a break because the county will be here in a few minutes.